struts like John Wayne, resembles Jim Carrey, and dresses like he's visually impaired. Because he is. Insight. Insight with Mark Farrell on the Progressive Radio Network.
Coming to you live from the frozen tundra, a.k.a. the Big Apple, New York City. Yeah, it is a cold one here today. 17 degrees right now. Wow. Yeah, it's been this cold in this part for quite some time. And we have snow. It is so cool to see the Big Apple in a blanket of snow. It hasn't been this way in over 2 years. In New Jersey, where I live, it was just beautiful. I mean, just to see the trees gleaming and glistening, it's really, really nice. Until, of course, the freeze and rain comes and, of course, makes everything like ice, crunchy, dangerous to drive on, to walk on. But it is pretty to look at. Hey, my name's Mark Farrell. The show is Insight. How have you been? Yes, I've been away for a bit. No, not locked up. Not in the can. Not yet. But there's still time for that. Work and life have been so crazy busy. I had to take a little step back. So here I am. Happy to be back with you guys. And happy to be here on Wednesdays. Now at 1 o'clock. Wednesdays at 1 o'clock. So make sure you make that a point to set your phone alarm or to go back and listen to the podcast. We've got a great show coming your way. Author Aaron Sachs, he wrote a great book, Why Dark Comedy Matters in the Fight Against Climate Change. He's an author. He's a professor at Cornell University. He shares some good insight and some real practical insight, whether it's just kind of wrapping your head around how we're going to get through this kind of scary era of climate change. Just think about what we're experiencing right now. I mean, this drastic swing of temperatures. Unfortunately, we're not going to see a drastic swing of temperatures for the foreseeable future. I think for the next week or so, we are in the maybe low 20s, the highest it gets in the East Coast area. Hopefully, wherever you are, it is sunny and balmy and you're having a great day and you have to put sunblock on. If so, please think of me and everyone else in the Big Apple as you do that. Anyway, yeah, we're going to meet Aaron in a few minutes, but I hope you're enjoying your week so far. Yeah, it's January, the doldrums of January, but what are you doing to change that? I mean, there's a lot of things that you can do, even if it's just a physical thing. If you're trying to lose weight, make it attainable. There's so many gimmicks out there that are shortcuts, and I say shortcuts to being healthier and to losing weight. So many people want a quick fix. Here's the deal. If you want to be leaner and lose weight, you have to eat less and move more. That is it, folks. Ozempic, all those pills, medications, quick diets that cost a lot of money, they are shortcuts and they will not sustain. You will not keep the weight off. And other things can happen, side effects, things that aren't healthy for you. So if you really, really, truly want to be healthy and lose weight, again, put less food in your mouth and move more often. And here's a really, really easy remedy. And I was kind of a naysayer about this for a while because all these guys on, I watched basically two things on, for the most part, on social media, fitness tips and techniques and exercises because I teach spin. I still ride my bike all the time. I work out all the time. I'm always, even in the studio, in between songs, I'm doing push-ups, wall squats, whatever, just to keep the energy high, which is a great thing to do. Also, I'm looking at woodworking videos because I'm always looking to see, oh, how can I build this joinery different from how I've done it before? Anyway, walking. Walking has been something that's been, I don't know, not on my radar for a long, long time because I've always been a triathlete, a runner, a cyclist, etc. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. It's not my speed, walking. It's just not my cup of tea. Then I saw during the pandemic all these videos from guys who are just jacked. And they're like, yep, used to run 10 miles a week. Yep, used to run 20 miles a week, etc. And now I walk. I'm like, what? You walk? Come on. No way. And guess what? I started walking probably 7 months ago. Probably like 4 days a week, maybe like 2 or 3 miles a clip. Now I'm walking 5 miles 5 or 6 days a week, and I love it. And here's the thing that I want to underscore. It burns fat, unlike high cardio exercise does. So, for example, if I run 5 miles versus walking 5 miles, If I run 5 miles at a medium pace, I'll burn anywhere from maybe 450 calories to 600 calories. Pretty good? Yeah. I mean, 5 miles, that's a lot of work for that many calories. And I will burn minimal fat. But if I walk, it gets flipped. I burn less calories, maybe about 200 and change, 250, but I'll burn fat. Now, fat is harder to burn off. So when you're at a lower cardio level, that is when you are able to burn fat. And also be sure that you're having protein in your diet, because if you don't have protein in your diet, you're going to cannibalize your muscles. And that is a big, big thing. Atrophy. People are like, whoa, I don't have any muscles. I do all this exercise. Well, you got to look at your diet, what you're putting in and what you're putting in. How much protein does that reflect in your diet? So those two things. So yeah, I was there. I was totally there in terms of being somebody who was like, no. Walking's not for me. So here's the deal. I do it like, again, 5 days a week-ish, and I got my wife involved in it, and her energy level has spiked. She's a very busy woman, professional woman, and even on a weekend, she's getting all these things done. She did before, but now she does it with like more zeal, and she's happy. For example, we have a thing called cleanuary. Yes, cleanuary in the Farrell household. Some people have dryuary in January, where they give up alcohol because they've been boozing it up since Thanksgiving, straight through to the new year, right? Hey, I get it, man. I've been there. But I'm having cleanuary in a Farrell household, and it's been very effective this month. So, like, if you want to try something different, you know, something fun, maybe something collective as a family, or just something to get your life together professionally or personally, try something like that. It's fun. Like, I'm gearing up to redo one of my bathrooms in the house, the kids' bathroom. I wanted to do it during COVID. I'm like, everyone's trapped in the house. I'm not going to do construction in the house. So now I'm gearing up for that. So that's just kind of spawned on getting other things done, like just rearranging the home, doing a deep cleaning, decluttering, and getting rid of stuff that really just, you know, we don't need to hold on to. So I give it away. I sell it, whatever I can do to pay it forward, pass it on, share the love, etc. So if that's something that would work for you, hey, that's a good thing to kind of give you a spark of being productive in January. Because, you know, hey, face it, January, no matter where you live, sometimes, even if you live in a warm tropical climate, which I'm very envious of you if you do, sometimes can just be like, oh, man, the start of a new year. Wow. Okay. Bring it on. You're like, whoa, really not into it. Whether it's because maybe the year before wasn't that great. I lost my mother last year. She was 95. Granted, still a loss. A loss is a loss, no matter how young, old, whatever the state may be of their living condition. So it's sometimes hard to be like, yeah, another year. I'm so stoked to do X, Y, and Z to accomplish that. Professional goal, personal goal, lose weight, gain muscle, get out of a marriage that's not healthy, find a new lover or lovers. Hey, because you know what? Maybe one's not enough. I don't judge, man. It's the 2000s. You want to have multiple lovers? More power to you, right? So whatever the case may be, that'll make you feel good, thriving, empowered, and just basic old happy. Whatever that looks like for you, you know, make sure you do that, man. You know, just make sure it's realistic, I imagine. Because for so many people, especially social media, my God, that's one thing that just drives me nuts. People are like, wow, I just don't feel like I'm doing that great in life. I'm like, why? Look at you. You're doing X, Y, and Z. You know, you have a great income. You know, you're able to provide for your family. Family's healthy. And they're like, yeah, well, I want a bigger house. I want to get a nicer car. I'm like, okay, well, those are good things to aspire to, but you shouldn't feel like your life is devoid of happiness because you don't have the car of your dreams. No, that's what it's not all about. It's about, you know, being grateful for what you have. Hey, I'm not a religious, spiritual person, but I'm a thankful person. You know, you work hard in life. You want to get what you have or more, certainly. But, you know, you got to live within your means. There's so many people out there who are just in credit card hell. my God, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 they're carrying on their credit cards. Yikes. Yikes, man. That's just heavy. So, yeah, that can make your January quite bleak. And I know a lot of people go really overboard for their kids for the holidays, whether it's for Christmas or whatever holiday you celebrate. People spend thousands and thousands of dollars. Like for my wife and I, we spend like $400 a kid-ish, you know, give or take, because, you know, certain things are bigger and they look more expensive. And, you know, the kids don't know exactly what things cost. But, you know, you really got to put a rein on, you know, the cost of presents, especially when everything is so astronomically priced. I mean, everything is just so, so expensive nowadays. Where did I go recently? And I'm like, what? It was $4 for like something that was just ridiculous. What did I buy? I couldn't believe it. I was astonished. And I said to the cashier, I'm like, no, that can't be right. And they're like, yeah, that can't be right. And they're like, oh, it is right. And we're both like, huh? Oh, my God. Yeah, it's just insane. My Lord, how things cost, especially when you have kids and they're just growing. And you need another pair of shoes, another suit jacket, or another sweater, or another pair of sweatpants. And it's like $80, $150, ka-ching, 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 ka-ching. It doesn't stop, man. It'll make your head spin. Thank God for Aaron Sachs, who you'll meet in a few minutes, because he's going to make your head spin a bit less. His book is called Stay Cool, Why Dark Comedy Matters in the Fight Against Climate Change. Aaron's a good dude. Lives up in, where is that? Up in Cornell is Ithaca. Yeah, Ithaca, New York. Man, you know how cold it is probably in Ithaca today? It's probably zero. Man, sorry, I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but it's a big deal to get snow around here because, I mean, my kids went out yesterday in the snow. And they had to wear, well, my younger kid was okay because they could wear the older kid's clothes. But my 14-year-old had nothing to wear. He had to wear my clothes. And I'm kind of a big dude, 6'3". He got into it. Obviously, it was a little bit big on him. Because kids, for 2 years, they have not been out in the snow in the tri-state New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area. There has not been any snow. My snowblower first got started to use for snow yesterday. I mean, I've been running it, you know, every month or two I start it up and get it going, but it hasn't been used for snow purposes in 2 years. That's wild. That's a long time. So kids are really freaking out in the area, and I'm really, really happy for them because, hey, it's a rite of passage, just like riding a bike, you know, the freedom to go outside on a snow day. And by the way, schools, all the schools in this area were canceled yesterday, and today they had a delayed opening. So rock on. I mean, to get a snow day, no school, and to go out and sleigh ride, wow. That's just magical, right? I mean, think about when you were a kid, when you couldn't even feel your digits anymore because you've been outside in the cold for so, so long, and you're having the time of your life. Yeah, that's great stuff. That is priceless stuff. I'm hiccuping over here. Stuff that I'm just so happy that kids in this area are able to experience again because, I mean, man, that is just glorious. My son had like four kids over yesterday, and I was told they were just sleigh riding for hours and hours and hours, and they came in just soaked and wet because we got some rain out here yesterday too, which turned into snow. But, I mean, there's nothing more fun and the feeling of being exhausted because you're outside just physically having the time of your life. And that kind of reminds me of something I've been doing lately. I was building a retaining wall. I got another garage. My cousin, who's a farmer, gave up his farm, sold his farm, a huge Ponderosa in Millstone, New Jersey. And man, did he have some wide array of equipment, including like excessive amount of garages. And some of them were actually like 20 by 30, like you can pick them up. So he gave me one. I put it in the back of my yard. I got a pretty big piece of land, and I put it in the back. And it was on a slope, so I had to level it with 15 tons of stone. Yikes, yeah, all with these two hands and a rake. Took a lot of effort, that's for sure. Anyway, I made a retaining wall around it just to keep all the stones in place. And I hadn't done one of those, wow. I don't know how long. When I was in college, I worked in landscaping. So I learned the skill of, I knew always have done carpentry. So landscaping, when you do a landscaping wall, it's mostly carpentry because you're doing right angles for the most part, cutting wood, making joints, connecting the boards, the timbers, et cetera. So it's a lot of fun. So I was working on that on and off for probably 3 or 4 weeks, probably 3 weeks before Christmas. Again, with the mild weather, it's been a plus for me to be able to, and most people to, in the trades to work outside. But it's so gratifying because, I mean, I am in my, like, Eden state of mind when I'm outside listening to tunes, cold day, miserable day or whatever. I'm just in my total zone of bliss out there with wood, sawing wood, burying wood, connecting wood, joints, hammering, drilling, screwing, watch it there, having a time of my life. And the outcome, whoa, just perfect. A few of my buddies are in the trades, and I send them pictures. I'm like, hey, what do you think? They're like, what do I think? I think you can put me out of work. But anyway, this visually impaired guy knows how to find his way around a saw and just has the time of his life, that's for sure. It's weird speaking about yourself in a third person, isn't it? I don't know why I just did that. Won't do it again. Anyway, so that's a good reminder in January to tap into what you love. What do you love to do? And maybe you need something else, something fresher in your life, whether it's music, learning how to play an instrument, or picking up an instrument that you used to play. Physical fitness, that's a great thing. You should do that no matter what, whether it's long walks, getting on an indoor bike and spinning. You don't have to go crazy in a spin class. I invite people to my spin class all the time. I'm like, hey, just take it easy. You're in here listening to music, the camaraderie of being with other people, and you're burning some calories and some lean muscle. You're developing some lean muscles and burning off fat. So it's a win-win. Maybe it's taking a course online. Maybe it's getting a part-time job, not so much for the money, maybe just for the aspect of you want to work in a nursery and you want to see plants grow and flourish right in front of your eyes. Maybe it's because you like children and you want to work with at a preschool. Maybe you want to get back into the workforce and you want to work in banking. God bless you, though. Man, I could never work in that industry. Working in radio is just like a whole different beast. It's like, like all these misfit toys like I am, and we're all working together, and it kind of just works. And I love that aspect of it. But whatever it is, just think about it. What makes you tick? And if you're not really sure, I don't know, just go online and just write new hobbies. Just search new hobbies. What can I do? And you never know what kind of thing comes up. Maybe you can learn about geography, parts of the world you want to travel to. Take up puzzle making. Is it puzzle making? No, you don't want to make puzzles. You want to do puzzles, right? Complete puzzles? Well, something like that. Crosswords. There's so many different word games, Wordle. I mean, there's so many different things that are available nowadays that'll make you feel like, wow, yeah, I feel productive. I feel like I'm using my brain. I feel like I'm being involved, because being involved, whether it's directly with people or just indirectly, virtually, digitally, makes you feel good. And that's why, one of the reasons why I'm here. I want to make you feel good, just like Gary does and all the other hosts right here on PRN. And speaking of feeling good, let's bring in Aaron Sachs. I spoke with Aaron a while ago. Again, he's an author of Stay Cool, Why Dark Comedy Matters in the Fight Against Climate Change. He's a press professor at Cornell University and just a good guy. He's going to give some great insight on the environment. Aaron Sachs, was it desperation that led you to basically take this topic of a very, very vital topic of the environment and flip it on its side to find some levity?
It was kind of desperation. I was pretty demoralized, as were many other people I knew in my sort of academic circles, but also in activist circles. I was just hearing over and over again about how just sort of despairing folks were about climate change and about the failure to generate political will to do anything about it.
The timing of this interview is very, very vital, because I'm at a point where I'm frustrated on many levels with the environment. Number one, I don't think the government's doing nearly enough. An example of this is where I live, recycling. A minor example, every other week is picked up. And I was away last week, so I missed it. So that means I have to get in my, put in my back of my SUV, three large garbage cans, which I'm the only one on the block who has lots of garbage cans for recycling, yeah, and drive 5 miles per way. So 10 miles because I missed. So I have to wait basically 2 more weeks. So 4 weeks to properly dispose of my recycling. That's one aspect. And the fact that we can watch so much of our world crumble in front of our eyes on so many different levels is just really, really disparaging.
Yeah, it's painful for a lot of people, myself included. And, you know, the environmental movement has done a lot. I don't want to dismiss what we as activists have accomplished.
Absolutely.
But I also feel like, you know, it's time for some new strategies. The shame hasn't worked. The fear hasn't worked. Let's, you know, why not lighten things up a little bit and see if we can reach people and activate people and cheer ourselves up in a different way.
How do we change things up? How do we flip the script? Because it seems like at the moment that we're in right now, we need to have the most gas, so to speak, the most corn oil, I should say, biodiesel, whatever we want to say, electric fuel, to push this momentum further down the road. And I just feel like, I don't know whether it's the politicians, because there's so many different topics and items and issues that are, you know, obviously taking center stage. Gun control, number one, possibly. Well, maybe not number one in everyone's eyes, but my eyes. But so how do we motivate people, the right people?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, but comedy actually has a pretty decent track record at activating and energizing people in the midst of really dark times. And that's really the sort of main point of my book, is that if you look at the I'm a historian, so if you look at the history, you see that people who have been really squeezed, and I mean, like, really in the worst possible circumstances, enslaved people, imprisoned people, even people in concentration camps during World War II, they have used dark comedy as a survival strategy, just, you know, for a moment to get a little bit of purchase on their impossible situation, so they could breathe, so they could look each other in the eye and say, we're in this together. Let's get through this. Let's build up our endurance and our perseverance. It's really helped. And we have lots and lots of Holocaust survivors who have testified to that. It's quite remarkable to think about it, you know. And I take inspiration from that. I think if those folks could joke about their Nazi jailers, then, you know, we can make jokes about climate change, try to feel a little better, laugh a little bit, and then move on with more action.
I agree. I find that there's, number one, everyone needs a release, regardless of how intrepid, how indomitable, how morbid possibly the situation will be. And I think it works. Of course, it's a scenario case. So what is your sense of humor like on a given basis? Is everyone in your classroom, and when you're lecturing as a professor at Cornell, thinking like, Professor Sachs, he is funny as hell? Or is it just coming out at the right times?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of comedy is about timing. And
sure. Oh, yeah.
And so if you're trying to be funny all the time, it's probably not going to go that well, unless maybe you're a professional comedian, which I'm definitely not. I've worked really hard on this. I would say, you know, I grew up with a sense of humor. I'm Jewish, and Jewish culture is full of dark comedy. You know, like I had Fiddler on the Roof on repeat, the film version from the early 1970s when I was a kid, and there's a lot of funny stuff in that. But I was also a pretty serious kid, and you know, I definitely got depressed about the way the world was going. This is very common these days. I happen to have three teenagers, and they're all depressed, and many, many young people I know are just having trouble thinking about the future with any sense of hope and excitement. So anyway, I kind of really worked on building more humor into my teaching, and I found that it's been extremely helpful. You know, I don't think my students are saying Professor Sachs is the funniest guy on campus, but they have come up to me many times and said, you know, like, I really appreciate that release that we got today, because I needed some new way to think and feel about climate change. I'm tired of how down I was all the time. And this was something different. This was refreshing. So
is the course you teach, or courses rather, at Cornell, a required material, or is it an elective?
You know,
in terms of environment.
Yeah, the environmental history course that I teach is an elective, although it's, you know, it's one of a number of courses you can choose to fulfill certain kinds of requirements for, you know, for particular majors or distributions.
So the students that you're seeing are people who are seriously interested in the environment, we hope.
Yeah, and seriously interested and almost always quite serious about wanting to do something to help.
Is that the position and stance that your three teenagers take as well?
Yeah. I mean, these past few years have been really, really tough on everybody, but I think especially on teens. And it's just hard, you know, it's like, I definitely would say their hearts are in the right place. But it's just hard to sort of feel activated and energized. And I can see, you know, it's like, to me, to them, I'm just the guy who makes dad jokes, right? But hey, I can see that it helps at least a little bit, even when I'm making dumb dad jokes to try to cheer them up.
So do your kids ever say, "Dad, what are we going to do?" I mean, you're a professor, you're an environmentalist, you're a humorist, I can safely say. What are we going to do to change this?
Yeah, they do say that. And, you know, usually my first answer is like, well, that's
your mom.
That's a good one, too. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I sort of feel like I'm doing, as a professor and a father, I'm doing what I can to sort of boost up the younger generations and hope that they can accomplish more than our generation has accomplished, or the generations who are older than us. It's, you know, it's been rough to see. I think there's a huge generation gap right now, and some of it is just built on the resentment that young people feel because older people haven't done squat, you know, and I get that.
True. And I feel that it's never been more underscored than I actually took a trip for work to DC last week, and I had a chance to downtime to go to a lot of different museums and tour different places. And it, you know, it makes you think about the, like, as you alluded to before, the unbelievable milestones we've made in this country for the world, the great strides we've made, but a great amount of work still lies ahead, because obviously with opportunity, the mass size of the population in the States, worldwide, the impact it's taking. And I just think we're moving at such a fierce speed that people can't even slow down enough to really seriously consider and understand, the average person, that there is a dire crisis that we're experiencing.
It's true. And I like the way you phrase that. It's so important just to slow down. And that's something that I really emphasize in my teaching. You know, the students I tend to encounter are usually very, very accomplished, busy people. And they don't always know how important it is to slow down. And so, and I feel the tension, you know, it's like, for instance, in my environmental history class, I assign Walden by Thoreau, which is a very, very slow book, purposefully so. And so they sometimes struggle with it, but usually they sort of absorb the lesson that sometimes you really, to just get a purchase on what's going on and what you might need to do about what's going on, you need to step back. History is really good at offering that kind of perspective, and I've found comedy is really good at it as well. It just, you know, it sort of shakes you up. It makes it it sort of sends you back a little bit and gets you thinking in new ways.
Yeah, it's a different sort of reset button as well.
Yeah.
Aaron Sachs is my guest. He's the author of Stay Cool, Why Dark Comedy Matters in the Fight Against Climate Change. What comes easier for you, to write the actual black and white empirical evidence, so to speak, of environmentalism? Or is it more the comedy that gets injected into that material and it naturally progresses into something that's serious as well as combined with levity?
I mean, I think I definitely learned the serious stuff first. You know, that's what they teach you when you go to graduate school, for sure. You know, this is my fourth book, and I would say the first three were pretty serious.
Yeah.
You know, there are light moments in them. But for this book, I really wanted it to be different. I really wanted it to be, first of all, you know, length does matter. I wanted it to be nice and short, so that people could see it and say, like, oh, you know, I can read this in a couple hours. And then I wanted the voice to be really, really light and fun, and actually provide, it's, you know, there's probably nothing worse than serious dry writing about comedic subjects, right? So I wanted the voice and the style to match the subject matter. And I wanted people to feel like when they were reading it, they were actually having their spirits lifted even while reading it. So it's not a matter so much of going through all of the evidence, although, you know, the evidence is there. It's more a matter of just, you know, like, let's go for a little ride here and have a few laughs along the way and think a little bit and smile and feel a little bit better, so that you're in a better place with regard to climate change in general, and you can make deeper contributions to what is a struggle and what should be a struggle common to all of humanity.
And perhaps maybe you're doing more for the environment than you realize, because you're saving people a trip to the comedy store.
That's so right.
There you go. Time, money, and impact on the environment. Speaking of impact on the environment, Aaron Sachs, was it a consideration to actually physically get this book printed, or did you not muse over going digitally entirely for the footprint aspect?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, and certainly the publishing industry, there is an electronic version of the book as well. You know, the publishing industry is doing a lot more digitally now, and I think that's great. But I also, you know, it's with environmental issues, it's very easy to get hung up on certain kinds of material issues. And for me, you know, one of the things that I've always worked on is the question of cultural values. You know, it's like certain things can be put into numbers, and you can say this is your carbon footprint, et cetera, et cetera. But you know, that can be offset sometimes by what you do culturally and intellectually. So anyway, you know, one sort of classic example is travel, right? I mean, obviously, for the sake of the environment, we should be burning fewer fossil fuels. And since there's no way, for instance, to do air travel without burning fossil fuels, we should be doing less air travel. At the same time, there is something really, really important culturally about travel, about seeing other places for yourself, about encountering
1,000%.
Encountering other cultures. So, you know, I would never wind up saying, let's ban air travel or something like that. It can be very important. And similarly, you know, like, I was raised as a person of the book. I think physical books actually have a powerful cultural value. And you know, like, that's something I'm willing to defend, even if the book adds to my carbon footprint a little bit.
Well, as we speak right now, obviously our listeners can't see this, but behind you is a massive wall of books.
Yeah.
And I'm a believer, no book should ever be tossed.
Yeah.
Books should be shared. Books should be garnered. Books should be, you know, so I'm all for, you know, not cutting back on the printing of books, because there's nothing like the tangible aspect of sitting somewhere. As a matter of fact, my kids are so ensconced, and it sounds like you're teenagers, maybe on the older end of their teens. Mine are, you know, so when I'm not working, I'm just going from point B to point C to point Z. So yeah. Downtime, 20 minutes, book. 45 yeah. minutes, okay, let's go here. Phone calls and book. That's what I do. I'm visually impaired, so digital, nah, not my thing. So it really works for me on many levels. But what would be the first top three things, Aaron Sachs, that are near and dearest to you in terms of environmental importance?
Oh, wow. That's a hard one. You know, I think like many people, I'm pretty focused on climate. And so that's gotta be a major concern. And
you live in Ithaca, New York, and you've had, well, actually you had one significant snowfall this year, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't even know if that could be considered significant what we had. Yeah. It was a very, very strange, warm winter. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to come up with a top three beyond climate. I think I'll just stick with climate and talk about it as, you know, the perhaps central struggle that is common to humanity right now. The thing is, the, you know, and this I think doesn't get said often enough still among climate activists, although it's gaining traction. It's also a justice issue, a social justice issue, because not everybody is being affected by climate change equally. There are structural inequalities that are creating certain kinds of climate refugees right now, even as we speak. And I guess the main thing I would say about climate is, yes, we're all in it together, and it's important that we all contribute to the struggle, but it's also important that we see that certain issues and certain regions and certain communities need to be addressed sooner than others, and in very direct social justice kinds of ways.
So agreed on all the points right there. So basically, though, until Washington, D.C. gets tornadoes, we're not going to see real changes.
That may be true. yeah, there was there's a section of the book where I talk about how, and this was, you know, I started writing this book during the Trump era. So I have a passage in there about hurricanes being directed toward Mar-a-Lago. It is hard right now, especially in the United States political climate, to get certain people to pay attention to this. The political and social divisions are so incredibly deep. You know, I'm in my early 50s. For somebody my age, it's not like I think the 80s were in any way a golden age, but it is interesting just to remember that at least Democrats and Republicans sometimes worked together in the 1980s. It's just like impossible now.
It almost seems like a perfect storm on many levels where we're living.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like we need is cooperation right now. We need agreement on facts. And that's, incredibly frustrating to somebody who works as a scholar, right? Who tries to
earns a living on facts.
Yeah, exactly. And now this is a whole other complicated topic involving the internet, but it's hard for people to agree on facts now. And that is a perfect recipe for getting nothing done.
You think we're underutilizing social media to educate, create change, et cetera, by environmentalists or change makers?
I don't know. I'm tempted to ban social media right now, but yeah, I mean, you know, part of what I'm interested in is just the types of messages that are getting out there. And, you know, I really feel like we've had enough messaging about the sort of difficulty of the situation and the fear that we should be feeling about the future. And now we need more messaging about hopefulness, resilience, persistence. We need stories about the past. You know, the other great thing about history, right? You study history for 5 minutes and you realize that dark times have been present pretty much throughout history, and you know, horrors are present all the time. But you also realize that many human communities have come through those dark times and have figured out how to persist and rebuild. So we need messaging about that too. I'll risk sounding cheesy and just say, sometimes we need more inspiring stories as opposed to scary stories or shaming stories.
That's why you have an inspirational speaker on your line as well, Aaron Sachs. I share stories all the time on stages everywhere. Do you think, for sake of being an extremist, that it's more urgent to underscore the little milestones that are being taken advantage of or set in stone? Rather, I think I just read the other day, is it two-stroke engines that will be banned in the next couple of years? And I heard they are very, very small engines, most of them like leaf blowers and edgers, but apparently they, pound for pound, they are one of the most volatile ways of polluting the planet. Things of that nature. Ford stepping up and saying by, I'm not sure, is it 2030 that all their fleet will be, or 90% of their fleet will be electric, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's very encouraging when industry starts to make actual progress. You know, it's a little bit scary that Ford is doing better than the federal government in some ways.
But then again, Aaron, if I interrupt you, I'm sorry for that.
No worries.
Look at the history there, because we have to obviously underscore history when I'm speaking to a historian here, is that obviously they created the Model T.
Yeah.
They were ahead of the curve before there was a curve. And one more point on here. When we talk about history and the dark times and lighter times that you were just alluding to, do you think it's a misnomer that people think, oh, it's just one of those times, like COVID, we'll get through it? But if significant change isn't done, and I don't want to sound like an extremist, can we literally get through it and survive?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, and it's hard. It's really hard to say, you know, which times are darker than other. I'm a little bit more comfortable just sort of saying, like, look, there's at all times there is suffering and oppression in the world, and we ought to be fighting against that at all times. So that kind of labeling is quite tricky. But you know, to go back to your earlier question, I do think it's really important to celebrate those signs of progress. You know, I'm about to, in my environmental history class this semester, I'm about to get to a lecture on energy history. And one of the things I'm going to say is that, you know, it's like, I truly believe that the energy economy is being transformed right now in a very, very positive direction. You know, I think we call this the Anthropocene or the age of climate change. And honestly, I think, you know, we're very close to something that we could call the age of solar energy. You know, I think that truly is going to be transformed over the next couple of decades, and that's going to be really, really helpful.
Aaron Sachs, how much excitement, sheer and utter excitement, do you get by standing in front of hundreds or thousands throughout a semester of students imparting just vital information like that, knowing that these people electively chose to take your class and really and honestly can make an impact on the future? Can you skip out of your lecture hall?
I wouldn't go that far, but
run.
But thank you for the question, because I love working with young people.
Yeah.
It's so energizing when they're able to sort of express their enthusiasm. It's been like a nice feedback loop, because it's like I get depressed and I need some energy from them. They get depressed, they need some energy from me. And I feel like we've really been able to help each other through the years, and I'm so grateful for that.
I just mentioned before how I speak to audiences, and there's nothing better than being able to provide insight, whether it's through levity, through live life experiences, real or perceived, but to have the positive impact on one person and certainly an audience or a room full of students that are interested and dedicated to learning and understanding a different perspective, a different culture, a different way of life, a better way of life is just nothing like it.
Yeah, agreed. I'm glad we have been able to share that type of experience. In my course yesterday, I did a dramatic reading of The Lorax, which it was super fun, because a lot of the students in the audience knew the story from when they were kids, but I was reading it to them as a historical document from 1971, so that we could talk about the sort of transformation of the environmental movement in the 1970s. And it was just, it's like, like you were describing, this kind of energy in the room, like, wow, this is cool. I love that.
So if you were to have your way, of course, your book would be everywhere, and the messaging rather, where would we take this to a higher extent? Would you like to see the SNLs of the world incorporate your science of levity and serious topics to blanket, the audiences and obviously create change as we know it and hope for it?
Yeah, I mean, I think of this as a small contribution, right? I don't claim that comedy is going to save the world, but I do think it could be really helpful in a lot of different contexts. While I was just starting to think of this book, I was talking to a friend of mine who is actually on the Intergovernmental Panel for Climate Change, the IPCC, and she was telling me that she and all of her colleagues on that panel are just always sad. They're the people who prepare these incredibly important reports to show us exactly what is happening with the climate and what we can do about it. I guess in my ideal world, the IPCC reports would also include a sort of satirical chapter about all of that, to just sort of help those people on the panel cheer up themselves, and to just remind all the people who are looking at those reports that their mindset really matters. They can't be depressed if they want to do something about this. I don't think that's going to happen, but I do.
Well, enter Aaron Sachs.
Well, yeah.
Well, if you think about it, if you take your model, the John Olivers in the world, the Bill Maher's, I mean, those are people who are doing, obviously they are savvy. They are really on the pulse of politics, pop culture, everything, all movements. And they put real hard work into their shows, and they're serious and they're funny as hell. So you can walk away out of there with morsels. Hopefully they're not a news source for people, but it's just a deeper engagement and wider viewpoints and exchanging of ideas, but they work.
I am so grateful for those people. And I did an event for the book a couple of days ago, and one of my students showed up for it. And she commented that, she basically couldn't get through her day without people like John Oliver and Hasan Minhaj, who are making fun of how awful things are in a productive way.
Yes.
that, That's part of what I'm saying is, you know, it's like comedy sometimes gets a bad rap as just being, you know, sort of escapist, but actually it's good comedy is a kind of reframing of deep experience that you can then use to do things differently.
When I'm on stage, even talking about dark times when I've had depression and dealing with anxiety, you know, really, really heavy topics. Yeah. And I, you know, self-deprecating levity appropriately, of course, because, you know, you need to break the tension because that's how I felt like I got through my time, because internally I knew that I just couldn't live in that headspace all the time. So what could I do to break that negativity and or change that biological chemistry that was not working for me? So yes, to your point, when it used appropriately and timing, as you alluded to even earlier in the show, is everything.
Yeah.
Aaron Sachs, real pleasure.
Oh, my pleasure too. Thank you.
How can people get your book?
It's out there.
It's out there, man.
Local independent bookseller. You know, it's published by NYU Press, so you can also go directly to them. But yeah, widely available.
All right. Last two questions, and they're going to be short answers, Aaron.
Okay.
You're speaking to two different demographics, teens and someone in their 40s or 50s. What can they do to positively impact the planet?
Just, you know, in a very short answer, try making fun of yourself. Like you just alluded to, I quote this wonderful comedian from the 1950s and 60s named Phyllis Diller in the book. She says, you know, I start with self-denigration and that allows me to move on to the denigration of everybody else. So if you direct a little humor at yourself first, then you make yourself much more relatable and you can say harder truths.
I never would have guessed in a million years that Phyllis Diller's name would have come up in this interview. Aaron, all the best to you.
You too. Thanks so much.
Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Aaron Sachs. Aaron Sachs, last name spelled S-A-C-H-S. Name of the book, once again, is Stay Cool, Why Dark Comedy Matters in the Fight Against Climate Change. My name is Mark Farrell. It's been a blast to be reunited with you. Again, let's do this and make this a point every Wednesday right here at 1 o'clock. Thanks so much to Dylan and for all his hard work and all the other staff at PRN. Thank you for keeping it right here because there's a lot of great information, entertainment that really can benefit you greatly. My name is Mark Farrell. My friends, keep living and laughing.
Insight with Mark Farrell. Check out this and all Insight shows on the Insight page at PRN.FM. PRN.FM. Have Mark speak at your company, your kids' school or college. Mark speaks on critical topics that affect kids and adults everywhere, from anti-bullying, mental health, drugs, and alcohol to overcoming adversity. Visit MarkFarrellMotivation.com for more info. Insight, Thursday mornings at 11 on the Progressive Radio Network.